first half, second half, like chalk and cheese.
That can't be my best bet, but it's up there.
Yeah, it's no stupid red card, that's for sure.
We'll give you the balls so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh.
I'm not fully keeping it together. Putting the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are coming to you on the evening of Tuesday, June 18th, 2019, upon the United States men's national team debut game of the 2019 Gold Cup, taking on Guyana. You will know the result before this podcast ends recording. My good friend, Rabbi Mark Goodman, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm good. I saw a groundhog in my backyard, although my mom thought it was a muskrat. So that's pretty much all there is to say about that.
Okay, does seeing a groundhog, like, does that mean summer's officially started? Is it late in, like, this groundhog slept in a lot, I'd have to think.
No, I mean, I'm mostly worried about my vegetables, because apparently that's the thing that I have to worry about, that they will eat my vegetables.
Okay, what vegetables are you growing?
Oh, yeah, we've got a garden going. We're not quite there yet. It's going to be a while, but we'll have carrots, we'll have tomatoes, edamame, or, you know, soybeans, for those of you who are better farmers than I, leeks, and I tried to plant a bunch of them, but I think only one is coming up, beets. So, but maybe that's because beets aren't that good, and so I spared myself. I got lucky that only one beet's going to make it. But what do you do with one beet, you know? I guess you roast it and put it on a salad, but still, that's a little bit disappointing.
That's just one salad. Like, one salad gets beets, or you only get, like, one slice of beet, which seems like a lot of work for one slice of beet for everybody, if you ask me, Mark.
Maybe I send my kids with it. You're gonna have to eat the beet if you don't eat the rest of your vegetables. I don't know.
Okay, yeah, maybe some bribery with that. But yeah. Are you guys doing composting at all, Mark?
No, we don't do that.
Okay,
that's too damn hippie for me, Matt.
Okay, well, if you have any questions on that, I'm doing some compost work for our Engineers Without Borders project in Tanzania as well, so if that's interesting. In any case, Mark, do we want to talk about any of the U.S. soccer stuff going on? Obviously, we have, you know, the U.S. men's national team who have probably one of the most the mood around the U.S. national team on the men's side is probably the most pessimistic I think it's been since I started covering soccer as far as going into the Gold Cup, and then obviously the women are probably looking at a comfortable win against Sweden into the knockout round. Your general thoughts on the current state of the senior men's and women's national team in their respective competitions?
You know, the men, it's, I don't think I'm going to have anything to say about it that our listeners don't already think, which is like, you roll your eyes when you look at Jossie Zardes. You wonder if Jordan Morris is ever going to get back in form, which would be nice. But, you know, you look good enough. Like, for me, I hope that Guyana doesn't actually win, because then this is going to sound like I am just absolutely the least fun guy in the world. But the Pittsburgh Riverhounds right back, Jordan Dover, is the right back for Guyana tonight, so part of me is rooting for Guyana, although realistically rooting for Guyana means I hope they only lose 3-0. But a 3-0 loss will set off more alarm bells amongst USMNT fans, who will just be like, we can't even beat the 177th ranked team in FIFA, you know, by 13-0. And by comparison, the last thing I'll say, and this is about the women, is by comparison, the women's team is so unbelievably stacked, it's ridiculous. The women's team has somebody suggested that the best two teams in the world right now in women's soccer are the U.S. women's first team and the U.S. women's second team. And someone divided the team up into 4 5-a-side teams. And oh my God, they were good. I mean, it was just, you know, if you split the team into 4 or 5-a-side teams, it'd still be like 4 of the best teams on the planet. Matt, what do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you've got, yes, there was some squad rotation in the game against Chile, but, you know, I think if Jill Ellis has a fully healthy squad and she puts out her first choice starting 11, you realistically have Mal Pugh, Carly Lloyd, and Kristen Press all coming off of the bench. And I think if you put any one of those three players on a team besides probably France, Germany, and England, depending on the position and how that player maybe changes things, any other team, any other women's team in the world, all three of those players walk in, are lock starters, and are probably one of the major stars of their attack. And I would still bet at least, you know, all three of them to be in the 18 for every other team in the tournament. Probably with Carly Lloyd's age and Mal Pugh being younger and more of a winger, they're probably a bench player. Bench players for Germany and for France. But then, you know, I'd expect all three of them to, you know, be regular features for England, for example. And, you know, that's absolutely ridiculous. And here, you know, Jossie Zardes has been the butt of a lot of U.S. national team jokes, and everybody talks about, you know, his first touch and everything, and would he even be in the squad if not for the connection with Berhalter through Columbus Crew. And the reality is, you know, he's starting and Jozy Altidore is on the bench. And after those two guys, I know everybody wants to like or is projecting upon Josh Sargent, but other than that, I don't know as far as center forward options, the U.S. national team has much going for them. And obviously with things going on with Tyler Adams and all the, you know, prolonged issues at left back, there's some serious questions about what the outside back position looks from here. I'm one of the people looking at the U.S. national, the men's national team going into the Gold Cup, and I look at them and say, like, realistically, they don't need to win this, and I don't think that it should be seen as either win or lose to Mexico in a controversial and close game in the finals or the semis, and anything else than that is an absolute failure. I'm much more concerned on how this team is playing. I think we've seen that Greg Berhalter's tried to implement a few things that were clearly above what the players were ready to do in the two warm-up games. I want to see this team evolve and improve in terms of their tactical acumen. You know, I'm focused way more on, is this team understanding and processing some of their goals? Are we seeing more of what they want to do rather than focusing exclusively on results? But, you know, that is a 30,000-foot long-term view, and that is not something that American soccer Twitter is here for, Mark. They are here for memes, and they are here for outrage, and that those two things are based entirely on what they've seen in the last 5 minutes. And, you know, it's the U.S. national team just kicked off, so we'll see whether or not those 5 minutes are any good or if people are yelling at us on Twitter after that. With that, Mark, shall we go on to other things of which I think our listeners are outraged that I am not as upset about?
Outraged!
All right, listeners. Yeah, this past Wednesday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, June 12th, 2019, the Colorado Rapids were defeated in their first and what will be their only game of the 2019 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup Tournament. They were defeated by USL side and top of the Western Conference, New Mexico United, in their first ever matchup against each other. It was 2-2 after the full 90 minutes. Nobody scored in extra time, and then ultimately New Mexico United won in PKs 4-2. So I guess the final scoreline would have been 2-2, in parentheses 2-4. You had the first goal coming in the third minute off of a set piece from Devin Sandoval, former Real Salt Lake striker, just absolutely trolling Rapids fans. Diego Rubio with some nice passing, with a nice set piece, a redirect from Lalas Abubakar. In the 35th minute, you had Nicholas Mosquito with a super first touch right in front of goal after the pass from Diego Rubio gets between two defenders. That puts the Rapids up 2-0 in the 46th minute. You had a lot of yellow cards in this game, Mark. Pretty much, you know, it got easier in the second half of extra time to just list the players who were still playing who had not gotten a yellow card. And ultimately, Axel Schubert got his second yellow for a tactical foul on Kavon Frater in the 72nd minute. That sent him off and forced the Rapids to devolve into a 4-4-1, essentially, and they pretty much just played bunker football at that point. And the aforementioned Kavon Frater scores in the 4th minute of stoppage time to tie it up. Not a whole lot going for either team, if you ask me, in extra time, Mark. And then Danny Wilson saved by Cody Mizell, I hope I have that pronounced correctly, in PKs, and then ultimately Sam Nicholson skies it over the bar, and Christopher Wehan scores to ultimately send New Mexico United through. Disappointing result overnight for the Rapids. I'd say a pretty good atmosphere, Mark. Supposedly there were 1,500 tickets for this game purchased by New Mexico United supporters, so you kind of had a nice little banter, you know, with the curse, and then C-38 just 4 or 5 sections apart from each other. You just didn't really see it because of the camera angles, but the entire, you know, the entire section that spells out Rapids on the east side of the stadium was pretty darn full, and it was a lively crowd, an excited crowd, albeit, you know, a small one. But Mark, your thoughts on the game, and what good things do you take from the Rapids getting railhawked?
Quick correction, just to say it's west side, not east side, but I know what you meant. You know what you meant. I know what you meant. Sometimes the words come out of our mouths before they fully process in the brain. But yeah, this is really disappointing. I mean, I think that the Rapids losing an Open Cup defies regular disappointment. It's transcended into just ridiculous disappointment that, like, it transcends just regular normal soccer preparation, like tactics and personnel and decision making. Like, you know, a lot of fans will scream about that online and complain about it and be frustrated about how the team set up and so on, but at some point there are just little blinks, little moments at which disappointment comes due to bad luck. You know, how do you explain blowing the lead in the final minute? Like, what was it? Like, they had 4 minutes of stoppage or 3 minutes of stoppage time, and they blew it in after 1 minute of stoppage? Like, that's inexcusable. It's just so frustrating that was a defensive lapse. But there was also the tactical side of that. So not to just pin it all on luck, but, like, you know, there's Axel Schoberg falling apart in the 72nd minute again. You know, his first yellow card was not a great idea, but you could argue it. But once you've got that yellow card, you've got to play differently. And now he's going for an emergency slide tackle in the 72nd minute, knowing that as he's racing for that ball and as he goes down for that ball, it's basically in his brain got to be, if I don't get this right, I'm off. Which, when I see a tackle like that, Matt, I mean, I assume that I'm not the only coach / player / analyst who sees a player go for that ball and thinks to themselves, do not dive, do not slide, because if you miss it, you're off, right? And I have to have thought that, like, Schoberg probably had that thought either liminally or subliminally in his brain. Like, I have to get this ball. But it's possible that he just misjudged it. But still, nonetheless, you know, once they're off, they don't go for it. And I think that that's also, like, maybe an absurd thing to say, that, like, up 2-1, but down a man, you're supposed to push for that third goal to lock things away. But, like, I don't know. They kind of bunkered and hung in there, and I'm kind of scattered on this because it's been a full week since the game, so it's kind of receded into the background. But, like, wow, this one defied explanation on so many different levels, and it's so disappointing. I think you and I, Matt, are both built of the same thing, where we think, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I think two things. Number one, I love Open Cup, so making a deep one would have been great. And number two, I think it's the Rapids already have, although I'd like to see them win MLS Cup again in my lifetime. They already have an MLS Cup. They won the 2010 MLS Cup. They've never won the U.S. Open Cup. So if you want to fill out your trophy case and be able to be one of those franchises who can say, we have won all of the hardware available to American soccer teams, the U.S. Open Cup is the next logical step, and they didn't do it. And that's pretty frustrating.
Yeah, no, I'll agree with you. It's frustrating, Mark. And, you know, if, looking at this game, you know, a month previously, you know, fans were ready to say, you know, the MLS season's completely over, it's a wash, you know, play bench players and just focus on winning the Open Cup, because as we talked about last week, you know, it's really only 5-6 games, depending on the draw in the year, from, you know, you getting a major trophy. And ultimately, you know, you would think that, you know, an MLS team still should be able to beat a USL team. You know, I have argued that, you know, take away the DPs and the, we'll say the productive TAM players. There's a lot of very unproductive TAM players who've been in a Rapids kit in the last 2 years. And so you take away that preferred starting 11 that has the DPs and the internationals and most of the really good TAM players. And I would say a really good USL team should be able to beat or at least give a below average MLS team a run for their money, and ultimately that's what we saw. I guess my complaint in this game, or where I look at this, is just the absolute lack of preparation. You know, the team appeared prepared, but they did not adjust once they realized that they weren't prepared. I guess maybe the one good thing that I have out of this game is, you know, Diego Rubio getting the start, and obviously he hits the goal on a really, really good set piece, created a couple of chances, and ultimately had the primary assist on the Nicholas Mesquita goal. So we saw him involved in both plays, and he was dynamic offensively, albeit against a USL team who their biggest weakness was the defensive side of the ball. So that's something where I would have expected him to dominate, and I wouldn't say that he had a full 90 minutes of, you know, or 120 minutes of dominance. I wouldn't have expected him to playing 120 minutes and then, you know, roughly, what, that would have been not quite 50 minutes plus stoppage time of being down a man, but I mean, he was good. But I guess we'll just throw this into bad things. You know, I'll retweet your points on Axel. Like, I think we're at the point, Mark, where I think Axel's definitely played his way out of being consideration for the starting 11 on this team, and I think there's a really distinct possibility that he's not in the long-term future plans for the Rapids right now for anything more than the occasional backup center back role. You know, I'm not sure with what Danny Wilson has done for this team in terms of being able to fill in and not be garbage in the D-mid role and then still having, you know, some rapport as far as being a center back, that I have to think, you know, if I'm trying to project onto Connor Casey, that he probably sees Danny Wilson as a more viable bench option than Schuberg, and, you know, Danny Wilson can fill into any one of those four spots, either in the two holding midfield spots or the two center back spots. And so, you know, I don't think Axel is any more than a reserve player on this team anymore, and we're talking about a guy who 2-3 years ago, you know, was a candidate for Defender of the Year on one of the best defenses in MLS history. Just, and before last year, I would have said a lot of that might have been Hudson, in terms of Hudson coming in and basically saying, like, I know defense is our big strong suit. We're going to spend money on two international defenders, and Axel, you're not a starter anymore. And wondering what that means for him from a psychological standpoint and obviously style of play. But, you know, you look at the possession numbers, you look at the stats numbers in terms of how Connor Casey's approached this team. They've pretty regularly had between 35% and 45% possession of the ball. Like, they're more keep fighting and they're more Pablo tactics right now than they are Hudson trying to be a possession attacking team, so to speak. And so that's playing into where Schuberg had success, and he hasn't had success under Casey in that style of play at this point. So I guess, you know, I know earlier in the season we were, you know, talking about how heartbroken we were that Serna flubbed another opportunity, you know, getting a couple good starts at left back and then playing himself out of position, but I don't know where Schuber goes from here. You know, if he's going to be a competent player getting more than 500 minutes in a season, and I think if he wants more than that, I think it's going to have to not be in burgundy and blue. But getting back to my main point, just the absolute lack of adjustments. You know, I didn't really care for any of the substitutions. You know, I think subbing on Kellen Acosta was the right idea, and I understand down a man, you didn't really have any other attacking options off the bench, so you know, send in Sam Nicholson and then, you know, have him, you know, play as sort of the lone striker in the 4-4-1, but this team did not appear prepared, nor did they adjust to the overlapping of the fullbacks from New Mexico United, nor did they adjust to the rotations that they had in the middle with all the attacking pieces. And my biggest concern going into this game was, what were they doing at center back and the holding midfield roles, and were those bench players going to be able to work against a potential first choice starting 11 for New Mexico United? And the answer to that question was no, it wasn't able to work. Axel struggled and was sent off. You know, Danny Wilson was extremely underwhelming, and I would say, you know, Cole Bassett was okay. Yes, he's still a teenager, but, you know, Kellen Acosta and Jack Price and Tommy Smith, you know, would have absolutely locked down that, and they would have had things figured out, I think, in within 30 minutes and certainly after a talk by halftime. And you could argue, Mark, that the Rapids never really figured it out, and they had 120 minutes to figure it out.
Yeah, they looked worse in the second half than they were looked in the first, with the exception of that, you know, immediate goal they scored right after kickoff in the second half. But, back to the point on Axel Schoberg, I think you nailed it, which is he had played himself out of this team last year. And with the change in coaches, he got himself one more shot and he played himself out all over again. I spent a little bit of time in Backpass and the Denver Post this week, kind of breaking it down. Nobody's sadder about his fall off than I am, just because I think, you know, if you've been around this team for a while, you know, we always love players who were drafted, and were drafted, you know, a little bit low, or, you know, just a super draft in general is kind of a crapshoot. And he was a surprise. He was a surprisingly good player. And then suddenly he just fell off completely. Some people chalk it up to injury, but I don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem like a hamstring injury should be the kind of thing that you never properly recover from. I mean, a lot of guys never properly recover from a knee injury, but a hamstring injury is a strange one. And it also just doesn't seem like it's about physical ability. It seems a little bit tactical, and it seems a little bit mental, or it seems just that he's dealt with a Colorado Rapids team that's changed and adjusted a lot. So I would like to see Axel turn it around, but I think he squarely moved into the time where that turnaround is going to have to happen with another team. He is signed, although I found out this last week. I published an article like 3 weeks ago in which I had in my database the fact that a player was signed through 2020, and I actually got a call from the Rapids who told me that I was wrong, that a player was actually signed through 2019. So, you know, my spreadsheet might not be perfect, Matt, but I did look this up twice, and Axel Schoberg signed a 3-year contract extension at the end of 2017, meaning he was on for 18, 19, and 20. He is signed through 2020. But I'm starting to get the sense, based on conversations I've had from within the Rapids organization, that that third year contract, or the contract that's beyond the next year, may have some sort of release clause or cancellation clause in it that allows the Rapids to get out from underneath a longer contract. So I think it's possible that Axel Schoberg, whose contract isn't that big to begin with, maybe moved on to the end of this season, and even if he's not actually transferred or traded, we may not see him back with Colorado next year anyways. Although, as you probably pointed out before, if you need him for depth and you just want to keep him around, you probably could do that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Mark. I definitely put him in the Dylan Cerna camp as well. Dylan Cerna, by the way, started in this game and played a grand total of 75 minutes, and honestly wasn't that impressive for me. You know, how much of that was just, you know, him being, you know, he was playing at left midfield, and I don't remember the last time that he played that off the top of my head, and you just had, you know, again, everybody was, it was a jumbled up lineup, so how much can you really gain from a guy playing in a role he hasn't been in a while around a bunch of other players who are potentially in other roles? You had Keegan Rosenberry, for example, at the left back position. Thought he was okay, like he was fine, nothing spectacular, but I would have expected if he was playing on the right side of the field against USL opponent that he would have absolutely dominated, and he didn't do that, and there were a couple of times that he looked, you know, a little bit suspect. I thought Chris Wehan, the midfielder for New Mexico United, for me was the man of the match, both in terms of the whole run of play in the 120, and then obviously he ultimately scored the PK that won it for the USL side. So, you know, Cerna was okay. He wasn't great. I don't think he played himself out of another opportunity to start for this team, but I also don't think, like, he had an opportunity to do something and make a statement. And I thought if anybody did that, as I mentioned a couple minutes ago, that was probably Diego Rubio, you know, who is kind of a, you know, Connor Casey's been liking having more of a number 10 style player in terms of that one position under Kai Kamara. And there's other players who do other good things and have been playing better than Rubio from a winger perspective, and Rubio goes out there and he gets a goal on set pieces. Set pieces continue to be a really big factor for the Rapids, and then he also gets a primary assist. So he, like, coming out of that game in Connor Casey looking at the lineup and everything and rewatching the game, Rubio, I think, is giving him something to think about. I think Nicholas Mesquita, who got a first start in a while, is giving Connor Casey something to think about. I think Connor Casey's probably thinking, okay, Axel's not starting for another month, and I would say Cerna didn't do anything to change his status, and I think his status is firmly outside the 18, and there's other better options with players who have more concrete positions than that. I guess on that note, Mark, let's take a step back on this one. There was general disappointment from Rapids fans on this one, and you touched on it a little bit regarding the team just being an ultimate disappointment in the Open Cup. How do we view this loss in the context of that, and in the context of the narrative about this team finishing well going into the Gold Cup, but then failing in a game that you would have thought would have been the easiest one for them to win, and in a tournament that the Rapids are, you know, like, notoriously, like, if anybody's getting railhawked, like, if anybody's going to find a way to lose to a USL team, it's going to be the Colorado Rapids.
I mean, you ask a question that I'm not kidding, Matt. I've been thinking about all week. As dorky as that sounds, but, like, I really do spend much of my waking time considering, like, what do I think about this soccer team? I mean, it's so much easier to think about the Rapids in 2016 when the narrative is really simple. They're a defensive juggernaut. Or during the Anthony Hudson debacle where, you know, we've stopped the bleeding was an 18-month-long battle cry. You know, like, or we just need to stop the bleeding would probably be a better way to say it.
And the stopping of the bleeding was an ugly 2-2 draw against Chicago Fire on a Wednesday, right, with the Fire playing a B team.
Such a good memory. Yeah, I mean, so the narrative that you're trying to establish for this team is, well, let's see. After Connor Casey took over, they lost a game, and then they proceeded to win three of the next four with a draw in the middle of there, and then they lost their Open Cup game to a USL squad. So, you know, if you want to be felicitous, you say, ah, the Rapids had a hiccup. They started a B lineup. They're dialing it in for their MLS season, and they're going to make a decent run that might even culminate in getting into the playoff picture. If you want to be pessimistic, you would say the wins were a fluke. The team is going to start regressing to its natural form. They're a sub-500 team the rest of the way. And the Open Cup, a loss to a USL team, is a strong indicator of that. I would say I am, and this is going to sound like people are going to probably be like, oh, yeah, we know that you're a pessimist. But, like, I would say I'm 70% the latter and 30% the former. That, like, I think this team is probably not as strong as they have indicated in the three wins they pulled off of four. I think you pointed out in your point some of the underlying areas in which the team is a little bit weak, which is Mesquita has had a really good little burst, but he can't be called upon to be the dribbly number 10 that everybody needs to, like, you know, take over the midfield. Kellen Acosta has little hiccups of moments, but he hasn't really ever in the last 2 years had a stretch of, like, five games where he was dominant, you know, and that's what we really need. We're just finding out that Sam Vines is probably the best left back on the lineup, but we're not sure of it. The center backs are finally kind of locking in. We don't really know what Cole Bassett is. Diego Rubio has hiccups. When Kai Kamara's out of the lineup, we don't look particularly offensive. Like, you know, there's a lot of, like, little question marks on this team, and the question marks have stacked up. And so the narrative is super hard to discern right now, but I've been thinking about it for a week because I wanted to write about it. And I'm seeing other people, you know, pop off, other writers people who I respect, and I like when writers craft narrative, but I'm really anxious about writing something. I mean, I'll be real honest, and maybe I hope this doesn't get me in trouble with my own outlet, but, like, Mark Kisler wrote a piece about how, you know, he's a great columnist. He's been covering lots of sports, which is a real strength that I don't have. And Kisler wrote an article where he basically said, you know, Connor Casey and Andre Shinyashiki, the local boys, make good. have really turned around the Rapids. And I'm like, wow, slow your roll, homie. That is a very, very early shout for two players. And Kaylee, Celie Godwin, who covers the team and covers sports for one of the local TV news outlets. She did an interview and she kind of talked about how the team is turning it around and how Connor Casey has really brought a new, fresh perspective. And the, you know, question at the bottom of the, on the Chiron at the bottom of the page was, you know, has Connor Casey played himself into the conversation for manager? And I love Celie and I think she's a really good reporter, but the quick answer to that question is no, there's no way he's going to be the manager. And everybody who's on the inside, pretty much knows it. And so that's, I hope I'm not breaking news here, but like Connor Casey can't be the head coach. Like he's not going to be. He can be an extremely successful interim who can play himself into another job somewhere else. But this is not for him. So when, you know, and this is like, Matt, this is me and my bread and butter of like, what's the narrative that I as a writer need to craft for this team in my next column? And what I'm saying here is I'm really reticent to craft any narrative because I don't think that we've, I don't think we can say this team is resurrected from the ashes like a phoenix. I don't think we can say this team is a tire fire with a hiccup. I don't say we can say that Connor Casey is the new future manager. I don't think that Andre Shinyashiki is the second coming, although he might, to finish my conclude my thoughts, he might win Rookie of the Year.
All really good points, Mark. All stuff that, you know, I have been saying or discussing or pittering about, you know, in the last month or so, where the big question I had about this team was looking at the quality of the opponent, the way that they were winning, some of the stats and everything, you know, was this a blip or was this a trend? And how much of this was the new coach bond as opposed to Connor Casey actually doing a better job with the pieces that he had than Anthony Hudson? And would things have been the same if they had just played the same quality of opponent? Would that game against Columbus have been the same if Columbus was fully healthy? And my answer to that question in really the entire run since the first win of the season was we're not entirely sure yet. You know, we're going to get a really good data point, I think, this coming Saturday when the Rapids play at Vancouver Whitecaps, who for me are, you know, kind of a middle-of-the-road team. Granted, you know, Mark Dos Santos is in his first year coaching the team and they've got some changes coming and everything. But that is a result that I would expect a playoff team in the Western Conference to get a result against. And then they've got back-to-back home games, I believe, hosting LAFC on a Friday, and then the following Saturday they're hosting NYCFC. Like, those are games that an MLS playoff team would be able to get results in those ones. And the quality opponents hasn't been good for the Rapids. The play has been better. There have been things that systematically, both in the stats and in the eye test, have been better, and those were things that were not better against New Mexico United. I guess the big thing out of this one, Mark, is honestly I didn't have any emotions out of this one because I saw that the Rapids were playing a B team. I saw that New Mexico United was absolutely going for it. The Rapids were a little unlucky to get a red card. And look, PKs are an absolute coin flip. So, you know, I think for if this was a baseball situation, I think you would have thought it was a hard fought lucky bounce in, you know, extra innings of a game 7. You tip the cap to the opponent and you move on. So I think where a lot of people were crying foul or were extremely upset at the result or were, you know, fully back on the oh, woe is me, the Rapids are crap, this is a complete tire fire. Like, I look at this result and I said, meh, to be completely honest. They did not have Kai Kamara. Kai Kamara is the critical piece in their offensive side of the ball. They struggled on the wings with Keegan Rosenberry playing out of position and none of their main four wingers who they've played in those positions starting. No Jonathan Lewis, you know, who is on the bench for the United States men's national team as we record, who for me is the best winger on this team. And you bring on Sam Nicholson, who's probably the best offensive sub that you had available to you, and you play him up top rather than at the right wing position. And you didn't have any Jack Price and you didn't have any Kellen Acosta in this one. You know, you had, you know, arguably, and, you know, I think Clint Irwin did an admirable job. I don't think that, you know, having Tim Howard and that would have affected anything. You know, Howard obviously has a really good history as far as stopping PKs are concerned. So, you know, maybe he gets something, you know, maybe he makes a save that gets the Rapids back in it in PKs. But again, PKs are an absolute crapshoot in this one. So, you know, I saw this one and I just thought, saw how the game progressed and everything that was going on. And I figured, like, I can't be upset about it. You know, if the Rapids show up and they get completely played off the field, if they lose this 1-3-0, if there's absolutely no adjustments, if the MLS bench players look like they don't belong on a field against a USL opponent, then okay, we'd have some other stuff to talk about. But, you know, I chalk this one up. This is an outlier to me, or it's because of how it was played, who it was played against, and who the Rapids were playing with in terms of who was being rested out of this one. I don't think you can attach this one to the narrative. This is a control group for what happens with the Rapids B team, and I would not expect this lineup to start this coming Saturday at Vancouver, nor in any of the fall. Like, I would expect this lineup that we saw against New Mexico to play against, you know, the Arsenal U23s a couple Mondays from now, and that's really about it as far as I'm concerned. So, kind of meh on that one. I don't think it fits into the trend. We'll address some of the other bigger stuff on the Open Cup narrative about the Rapids and their entire history when we get to Ask HTHL. Shall we move on, Mark?
Let's go.
All right, before I mention, before we start previewing the Vancouver Whitecaps, I do want to remind our listeners that we do have a special deal with the Denver Post. Head on over to denverpost.com/HTHL. You'll get a really good deal on all the digital content that they're putting out, whether it's Mark's stuff that Mark's doing, stuff that Jake Shapiro's doing with the Rapids and other stuff. I want to give Jake a shout-out, Mark, because the Rapids played their Open Cup game the exact same night as Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals, and Jake, who was sitting next to me in the press box, was very gracious in not ruining the score for me so that I would have the blues about not being able to watch the game and then experience it after the narrative happened. And as a former St. Louis native and WashU graduate, I'm saying I'm very, very happy that the Blues gutted it out against the Bruins. When a Boston team loses in the final in professional sports, Mark, America wins. With that, listeners, this coming Saturday at BC Place up north in Vancouver, Canada, north of the wall, the Colorado Rapids will be taking on the Vancouver Whitecaps. We are currently 13-34 through the Colorado Rapids 2019 MLS season. The Vancouver Whitecaps are sitting in ninth in the Western Conference, Mark. They have 18 points off of 16 games played, a 4-6-6 record with a -3 goal differential, two spots below the red line. The Rapids remain, because they haven't played an MLS Cup game since last we spoke, in 11th the Western Conference. They have 15 points off of 16 games played, 4-9-3 with a -9 goal differential. They are 1-5-1 this season at home. Vancouver straight even in 9 played, 3 wins, 3 draws, and 3 losses at BC Place. We won't talk too much about the actual squad, Mark. It's still a very similar team. Ali Adnan had just joined the team as an Iraqi international outside back for Vancouver. You know, they've still got Andy Rose. They're relatively healthy. Jordy Rain is a good attacking player. You know, there's a couple former Whitecaps who are on the Rapids right now. Mark Dos Santos is still the head coach, and they're still trying to evolve some of their tactical ideas, and they're still very much looking forward to their roster opportunities as they try to spend all of those big bags of money that they got in the transfer from Alphonso Davies to Bayern Munich. Mark, your thoughts on the current state of the Vancouver Whitecaps, how they're similar or different from when we last saw them play the Rapids, and what you are expecting from this game on Saturday?
I still don't understand this team. I don't really know what to expect from Vancouver. They're still a work in progress, I suppose. You know, I've tried to invest in the lineup, and I can't, you know, they've rotated a fairly large amount. There's been a lot of, I mean, calling it inconsistent is probably unfair. But yeah, there's not a lot of players on this lineup that I can point to and say difference maker, lockdown player, certainly going to start. You know, even Jordy Reyna has been coming off the bench sometimes, hasn't been prolific in terms of scoring or assisting. So, you know, it feels like Vancouver is very much a work in progress that is like 50% of where they're going to be next year. And next year, they're going to eliminate some of the players that we see this year, and or they're going to try some new things. I don't know. You know, the formation that they've been going with is a 3-5-2. It doesn't involve a press. I'd say it's pretty hybrid. It's pretty flexible, but it's not, they want to win the ball in the midfield. You know, the concept of what you call a low block or, you know, sitting deep. I haven't seen a lot of that from Vancouver, but that may have more to do with the fact that I've seen a lot of them, their games played on, at home. And typically home teams don't sit deep. So, you know, I think a team that really Vancouver wants to cut apart your lines. They want to keep you pinned down in the midfield and force you to kick it long and get frustrated. They're not a defensive team, but they defend well, is I guess what I would say. They're not a very good attacking team, but they can score. So, and, you know, trying to figure out what exactly Mark Dos Santos wants to be known for and who on this team is the guy who everybody is going to say this is the linchpin, the thing that holds it all together. You know, none of those things have emerged yet.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Mark. I want to say Vancouver almost has Chicago Fire syndrome. When I look at the Fire and I look how Veljko Panovic manages his team just with the resources or lack thereof that they've gotten from ownership and from Nelson Rodriguez, he kind of just takes his approach that we're just going to deal with things game by game and try to get a result. And if that thing means that we completely change lineups or tactics from week to week, then we'll absolutely do that. Now, that's, you know, Veljko Panovic in his third year with the team, and they just haven't had any consistency because the Chicago Fire are a Fire at the, you know, ownership level and are obviously moving out of Bridgeview and back to Soldier Field. And that's another topic for another podcast for another year when the Rapids are actually playing Chicago again. But I kind of see that, you know, Mark Dos Santos is still trying to figure out what his identity is with this team. They brought most of their big pieces back with the exception of a few guys who are relatively bench options. Mark Dos Santos just saying, who's available in the league, who's a guy I like, and who's a guy that we can get right now. And while those might be great depth pieces or great, you know, 2 to 3 year projects over the course of his tenure with the Whitecaps, like, they didn't get anybody who's like, this is a lockdown starter. Like, he didn't walk in and say, okay, we've got an open DP slot, we're gonna go get my guy, and we're gonna get him in January in time for the start of the season. And in that, I think a lot of his experimentation has been out of figuring out what, of players who were holdovers from, Carl Robinson, what does he have in them and what he wants to try and implement? So taking stock of how valuable are they to me, or should we look for moving them on? So it's been a lot of experimentation from Vancouver, and I think we could see a lot more in this game as well, Mark. They've had a couple of weeks off. They have not played a game since Friday, May 31st. That was an MLS League play game, 1-1 draw against Toronto FC. They did not play over the international window, and then Vancouver, as a Canadian team, plays in the Amway Canadian Championship. That won't take place for, you know, another couple of weeks, so they haven't played anything in what's now, as of tonight, the two Open Cup rounds that MLS teams will be playing in between last week and from the ones who won this week as well. So they've had a couple weeks off, and they also had a bunch of injuries. You know, Yordi Reyna was questionable. Ali Adnan, who I just mentioned, was questionable as well. So, you know, they have a bunch of injuries, and so with 18 days off, you know, how healthy are those guys for the ones who were out? They also have 4 guys who were called up to the Canadiens men's national team for the Gold Cup who will not be with them. Daniel Henry, who's a very good, cheap center back, you know, who I really like, kind of a Kofi Opare type in terms of how he chooses to play. Maxime Crepeau, their main starting goalkeeper, will be out, so there's a very good opportunity, chance that, Zach McMath will actually be starting for the team, against, his former team, the Rapids. Russell Tyburg, kind of their bulldog in the midfield, but hasn't always been a starter, will be out, and then also Derek Cornelius, who off the top of my head, I don't remember a whole lot out of. So, it's kind of hard for me to preview this team for a couple of reasons. One being just what's the style of play and approach that Mark Dos Santos is gonna have against a team who, if they want to make the playoffs, they should beat at home, but also considering who's healthy after, you know, almost a full 3 weeks off from league play, and also dealing with the fact that, you know, you could argue they've got 3 lockdown starters or 3 guys who are regulars in the 18 who are missing from that. And, you know, do they vary things based on them being healthy but maybe not fit, having not played in a couple of weeks, versus the Rapids, who are maybe also nursing some of the injuries that they have but also played 10 days ago. So, and then you also have the factor of them, you know, playing on turf, and off the top of my head, I don't think the Rapids have played a turf game yet this season other than the game against Seattle Sounders. So how much of that is a variable? So to be honest, like, my preview for Vancouver Whitecaps is I don't know what to see from this team.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think we're actually going to get a good sense of that until we see the lineup to see, A, who's healthy and what's Mark DeSantos going to do with the team given the circumstances. I guess given that, Mark, let's focus more on a Rapids-focused standpoint. You know, the Rapids had a great run of form going into the Gold Cup break. They gave a couple starters, you know, and guys who I think needed rest. They gave them rest in the game against New Mexico United. Like, I would assume we would expect Connor Casey to not want to change the formula, go there, you know, 4-4-1-1, whatever you want to call it, with the two D-mids, the two wide players, and Kai Kamara, and just hope that, you know, they can, you know, let Vancouver have the ball, get 40% possession, and try and nick something on the counter, no?
Yeah, that's, you know, it's a road game, so you can expect that. Interestingly enough, it's another one of these light weekends for MLS because of the Gold Cup. So there are only five games on Saturday. I guess it's not that light, but it's a little bit on the light side. So that's an interesting thing to watch out. Also, Vancouver, Colorado will come right off of the U.S. playing Trinidad and Tobago in the Gold Cup. So people will be coming, you know, back to back off of that game. You know, U.S. and Trinidad and Tobago, is something of a maybe could be a revenge match. And after tonight, Trinidad is going to need to, win in order to progress out of the group. So I know that I'm talking about the other games because, are slightly more consequential. But the other piece is that we've entered the real dog days of summer for the Rapids, where the games don't feel like they matter that much because, you know, we've gone through the early narrative of the team, we've changed coaches already, and we're not quite into the stretch. They all matter for the Rapids. They can't really afford to lose. But this game screams play for a draw, you know, more than almost any other that Colorado has. You know, there'll be a little bit of rust. There'll be the questions of turf. There'll be the questions of we don't really know what to expect in Vancouver. They line up differently every time. And just overall roadliness, although that's not really a word, but I like inventing words, roadliness.
For me, I think this is come out and play a lineup that's intending to get a result and try to get a win, but I would say definitely if it's the 60th minute, I think unless the Rapids are down a goal after the 60th minute mark, I think they're looking to protect whatever that situation is. If it's 1-1, you know, at 60 minutes and 1 second, I think they're playing for protecting the point. If they're up 1-0 or if they're up a goal or anything like that, I think the plan is still to probably protect that point. I think that's a very pragmatic approach. I think that's probably how I would approach it, but you know, I think going in you have to try and get something from there, and in that I think at minute one you're thinking, let's get a win, let Vancouver have the ball, try and frustrate them, and then hope that, you know, the concentrated power of, you know, Kai Kamara being an extremely salty human being at times compels him to score against his old teammates, in their building, and probably Nicholas Mesquita, who's been on a great run of form with all the goals that he's scoring, probably wanting to, you know, send a little message to the Vancouver Whitecaps ownership group as well on that front. I guess with that, Mark, let's go to predictions. You know, give me a score line and how you think this game, ends up shaking out.
I think 1-1 is very likely. Just the Rapids will sit deeper and try to counter, and Vancouver will be wise to that tactic. One of the things that we've talked about a little bit, and one of the things I wrote about this week is that Colorado is starting to look like a one-dimensional team. It's just a different dimension than Anthony Hudson. And that is, sit deep and strike on the counter. That is something that other teams are going to start to figure out. And so Vancouver will start to understand how to play against that. They will have watched a lot of tape. They will be able to anticipate the way the team is going to set up. One final note on this. One of the things that I find predictions really hard in the sense that, like, can I say anything interesting and meaningful while trying to give a prediction? Last week, I think I said, oh, the Rapids are going to blow New Mexico out of the building. We're going to finally put together a good U.S. Open Cup. Nothing could be farther from the truth. The Rapids, I said 3-0. The Rapids wound up losing 4-2 on penalty kicks after drawing 2-2 after 90. You know, predictions are a sucker's game, and I play it every week because you tell me to.
Absolutely. I'll take a 1-1 draw on this one as well, Mark. You know, Vancouver on their own had a very good, not a good, but I think a respectable, all things considered, way to end out their run before the Gold Cup break. They got a draw at a very injured Sporting Kansas City. They got a 2-2 draw against New York Red Bulls against the B team. They won against FC Dallas, and they tried, you know, tied Toronto, who had some injuries, but they contained Alejandro Pozuelo, which was really, really impressive. So, I agree with you that maybe the one concern that we hadn't really addressed in the big thing in talking about the New Mexico game is the Rapids are very much one-dimensional, and one of my other concerns about this team in terms of the narrative and is what they've done with all the wins in league play recently, is that a blip or is that a trend, is that they've done it, they've been a one-trick pony, and eventually that's going to get scouted. Eventually the Rapids are going to play a team with two really good fullbacks. You aren't going to get let Sam Nicholson and Jonathan Lewis run wild, and the Rapids are going to have to come up with a plan B. They need something else on the utility belt. They didn't need it right now. That's something that can be a work in progress. That's something that could just be, we're going to focus on set pieces when the counterattack isn't really working, but that still needs to get ironed out, and that needs to get ironed out against teams who are prepared for them, prepared to negate the counterattack, especially from the wide players, and then also do that against good opposition. This will be a good first test for that, and then really talk to me after the home game against LAFC and then the home game against NYCFC, and then I'll probably have a much better idea whether or not the recent change in form was a blip or a trend, and the reasons behind that designation as well. So I'll take a 1-1 draw on this one, just because I think Vancouver is going to be a little bit healthier. They've had a whole bunch of time to prepare for this. They've been talking about this game probably for 3 weeks, whereas the Rapids have realistically been talking about it for, you know, 10 days at the absolute most. And Vancouver's playing at home, and they're playing at home against turf. So I'll take a 1-1 draw, and I think that at the end of the performance, that's probably a result the Rapids will be content and happy with. That said, I think they'll want to get something more from the home games that they have, and certainly that 4th of July match that's coming up against New England Revolution absolutely has to be a win for the Rapids. With that, Mark, I think there's one thing that we want to address on. The rumor mill has kind of gone cold on the coaching search front, and I have a working theory that I don't think it's going to be Robin Fraser, Mark. And my reasoning behind that is I think the international break would have been a perfect time in which to announce that and have Robin Fraser or any other coach take over, but particular having a guy come in who didn't have anything else to work on. Whereas if, you know, you had a guy who was currently employed by another team, especially another team in MLS, if they were to leave, that gives him plenty of time to get acclimated, possibly move some stuff, relocate the family, find a living situation. And then also develop a rapport with the players and start to implement something in whatever training sessions that he has going out. At the same time, a former employer, in the case of Robin Fraser, Toronto FC, would have time to potentially shuffle around their staff or appoint someone to fill the void left by Robin Fraser, you know, as an assistant on the backroom staff for Greg Vanney. Whereas, and I'd say even the same thing, granted, that rumor's gone cold, with Josh Wolf, and if the rumor was true, I don't think Josh Wolf is a candidate right now, because Josh Wolf isn't dogging his man, his buddy and his former manager and his, you know, I guess his boss, in Greg Berhalter, in leaving in the middle of a tournament.
Whereas
since the Rapids were still looking for somebody else and we're going to announce that in the near future, it's going to be somebody who doesn't have anything imminently going on. That could be an international coach who doesn't have anything going on in this window anymore. That could be a coach coaching a club team internationally who is in the middle of the offseason. That Argentine candidate who you mentioned, any one of the various coaches who doesn't have anything coming up with a potential European team, or somebody who's not doing anything big in U.S. soccer, for example, as well. You know, let's throw in Todd Ramos for that, for example, who obviously isn't coaching the U-20s right now, or, you know, doesn't have them in camp because they're no longer in the under-20 World Cup. So, what your thoughts on my theory that it's not Robin Fraser because of the timing, and that potentially that means that the Rapids could be taking more of a long view, granted, on a decision that they have and should be taking their time on?
I think it's Todd Ramos or Robin Fraser, and I think the team is just waiting to announce it for either when those coaches are ready to join the team or for when there's an obvious moment where the fan base needs it introduced. And by that, I mean...
they need a PR distraction after losing to Vancouver 5-0 this weekend.
After we've lost a couple games. Like, right now, I think, you know, I could be totally wrong about this, but it feels like introducing the a new coach while the old coach is still, you know, experiencing his honeymoon and is experiencing a lot of success is probably going to go down really poorly. So my sense is that, you know, you can wait till July or August, and then it's going to be Frazier or Ramos or still Josh Wolf. I don't think Josh Wolf is totally out of the picture. There aren't a lot of other names, and I'm not operating on a lot of inside information. I have not been slipped any pieces of paper with names on them. I have not gotten any emails. The only thing I've gotten emails from are agents telling me that, their guy's resume is on the team's, you know, desk. But that doesn't mean a lot because there's probably 100 resumes on that desk, you know. I don't know the difference between the long pile and the short pile. There've been whispers, and the whispers lead me to believe the same thing that most people in the American soccer pundit world believe, which is the next coach is going to either have MLS experience or going to have U.S. experience. The next coach is likely going to be announced before the end of this season. And the next coach is going to be someone who has the requisite amount of experience as opposed to Anthony Hudson, who didn't really have club experience.
Yeah, no, I think you make some good points, Mark. I guess where the side that I'm coming in on is I agree with you about Connor Casey being on this honeymoon, but I think in terms of, you know, I guess we haven't even really talked about this because it's not really relevant to me, but relevant to the Rapids. But, you know, the player salaries came out for the first half of the season this past week. And I, you know, normally when that happens, I scramble them. I write a big 1,000-word article with a very interactive and open and available Google sheet, and I didn't do that this year because there wasn't really anything significant going in on the Rapids. There weren't any big salary bumps or changes. The one thing I was really curious about was how much potential targeted allocation money Kai Kamara would have been on, and you know that didn't really change the math for me on this front. And I think the Rapids don't really have a whole lot of flexibility in terms of signing players or making a big move in this coming summer transfer window. I think any flexibility they had with that, they used up in acquiring Abubakar and Lewis. And if they were to try and, you know, really shake things up, that would take, you know, equal in terms of trying to get somebody off the books or moving the roster around. You know, if they don't have a huge pile of cash and then go and turn that into a player right now. You know, if they're going to do something, it's going to have to be, you know, Axel Schuberg and another asset and then maybe something else going to somebody for an equal level of asset. You know, they're not pulling off a Kellen Acosta level trade this summer for me, really, and with just not having a lot of flexibility on the international roster spot and not many of those being available in league, I don't think they're going to do much on the international front. So, and I don't think they're going to make that, they're not going to make any of those moves without getting consent or input from that next potential head coach. And since they haven't appointed that next head coach, unless they do it, you know, in the next week or so, I don't think that they're going to be looking to stand pat. And if somebody calls Porrick Smith, he's going to pick up the phone. And if he really likes something, then, you know, maybe he'll consider it. But, you know, I don't think they're looking to wheel and deal this summer in the ways that they have been in the past. And so in that, I think still the organization on a whole is looking ahead to this coming January with a lot of money coming off the books, a lot of opportunities for flexibility if they want it, and then obviously the two open DP slots. And in that, they don't need to make a decision about that head coach until it's time to make those roster decisions. And just like with the hiring of Anthony Hudson, they really don't need to have that person entrenched with the club until really the middle of November. And in that, I think it would be wise for them to take a little bit longer, unless one of the candidates they're looking at is fielding offers from other teams and you're potentially getting sharked by somebody else. Like, they can afford to wait. And if Porrick wants to consider an international player or an international coach, then there's going to be a lot more flexibility in June and July than there was 3-4 months ago. And if he still wants to wait for somebody else, you know, like I said, other than Josh Wolf, nobody at U.S. Soccer has anything major coming in, you know, in the next couple of months after the Gold Cup and after the Women's World Cup ends. If for some reason he wants to try and acquire Jill Ellis, that I think would be a fascinating decision, and we could go off on a random tangent about that. But this isn't a move that should be rushed. It's not something that they have to make a major decision. And it's not like if suddenly tomorrow they say, oh, Robin Fraser's our next head coach. You know, if he wants to get entrenched in the team right now, that's something that's beneficial. But I think whoever that next head coach is, they're probably thinking, you know, I can observe the team from afar, or I can watch some old film tape and have a couple of meetings with players to decide what I think of the current roster. And, you know, let's dive into things with the scouting department and the analytics department about looking at the two new DPs. And those decisions, like I said, don't really have to start happening until November. And, you know, as of June 19th, it's not like June 18th. They don't need to make that decision right now.
Shall we I agree on? With you, and I can't say it any better than you.
Shall we move on to Ask HTHL, Mark?
I mean, I would love to talk about roster, but you pretty much nailed it.
All right, so we've got one Ask HTHL from this week, and it comes from Zing Leg Tubes. We haven't heard from you in a while. Thank you for tweeting at us, Zing Leg Tubes. And so he asks, can you guys tap into our mysterious rapid sources? Is there an institutional opposition to the U.S. Open Cup? Are we as an organization protesting its existence? Hashtag Ask HTHL. Mark, how much of the failures of the Rapids in the U.S. Open Cup and them being a punchline upon which USL opponents dance on the Rapids' graves is a function of Rapids front office Open Cup ambivalence?
It's not the front office. My sense is, and this is, I don't know, one of the problems of not being a very good team for several years is a really obvious secondary piece, which is you're not going to have depth, right? If your starting players aren't killing it in the league, then the guys who don't even make the starting lineup or who are not in the 18 are really not killing it. And I think that that's a huge problem when it comes to the Open Cup. No matter what you want to say, no matter how many fans I saw on Facebook and Twitter and Reddit say they wanted the coach to make the league secondary and make the Open Cup primary and start the starters. You know, one question is A, who are those people? You know, who are the definite lockdown MLS, Colorado Rapids starters? And B, you still have to rotate your squad a little bit because some people are going to be tired. And where's your depth? You know, who have you got? You know, and the answer the Rapids have is not much. I mean, Danny Wilson started this game. Sam Vine started this game. Cole Bassett started this game. Kellen Acosta came off the bench. And Kellen Acosta came in and put in, like, you know, 15 really good minutes. But, like, by the time he came on, it was a little bit too late. So I think that's it. For the front office, the only thing I can call them on is not that they weren't focused on this game or they didn't prepare for it, but that there's just not a lot of depth. And it'll take time to develop that. One of the things that will benefit this team next year in terms of depth is these young kids who this year are just kind of scrapping for minutes and would be good Open Cup, you know, virgins. Next year, they'll be Open Cup veterans, and they'll be the kind of player who you can say, like, they round out the roster because they actually belong here, as opposed to they round out the roster because they're only a 70,000 they only cost $70,000, and because they're homegrowns, they're a $0 hit on the cap. So next year, you'd hope that squad depth will be better for the Open Cup, and maybe we'll get past the first round, and maybe we'll beat a USL team.
Zing Leg Tubes, I don't think that the Rapids are that much different. If I were to rank every team in MLS on the spectrum in terms of we are all in on the U.S. Open Cup, and that would be your Sporting Kansas Cities, that would be your Seattle Sounders, to a lesser extent the Philadelphia Union of years past, and I would put other teams on the other end of the spectrum of we're going to start our B team. If we have an MLS 2 team playing in USL, it's effectively that going to be that starting 11. We could not care less. You know, talk to me when the B team gets us to a semifinal, and then maybe we'll take it seriously. And those are, you know, your Bruce Arenas, your Portland Timbers at times, definitely your New York City FCs historically, especially ironically when they have to play the New York Red Bulls or the New York Cosmos as well in that. I would say the Rapids are relatively in the middle. And my reasons for that are the Rapids have kind of gotten a crapshoot when it comes to some of their Open Cup opponents, Mark. If I look at them, going back to my theory or that I've developed that take a playoff caliber USL team, their starting 11 beats a non-playoff MLS team's bench. The Rapids have normally had played their bench in these games against USL teams that make the playoffs. Nashville SC, in their first year of existence last year, were a very good team in the Eastern Conference. Oklahoma City Energy, pretty much mid-table. I think they made the playoffs in the Open Cup game that the Rapids played them a couple of years ago. And then, obviously, New Mexico United is a good team. With the exception of really their first year where they were gangbusters, the Colorado Springs Switchbacks have been average to really bad and trending towards really bad in the last couple of years. And so when the Rapids play their bench against a really bad USL team's bench, the Rapids are generally better on that. And they're kind of limited in terms of what they can do from a geographic standpoint, just with where they are and the fact that that first USL team is generally going to be a team based in the Mountain Time Zone, or it's going to be a team based in, you know, that sliver of the U.S. north-south, basically from North Dakota to the middle of Texas, often Oklahoma City Energy, for example, or, you know, maybe a team randomly from Nevada. But they're not going to get lucky in terms of some of the, you know, less good USL teams on the, or the, you know, the non-league teams, for example, you know, in the Pacific time zone. Obviously, the San Jose Earthquakes or the Cascadia teams would potentially have to deal with the Sacramento Republic, who are normally very good. And there's a bunch of really bad teams throughout the Eastern time zone in the USL, Mark, that you could speak to much better than I, who are very bad and who are easier to beat. You look at Charlotte Independence, you know, who got, you know, Florida Soccer soldiered this week. You know, other than the Tulsa Roughnecks, there's nobody in that geographic range, or the Switchbacks, there's nobody in that geographic range for the Rapids to play who are historically a bad USL team. So in terms of every single MLS team playing the full starting 11 in their first Open Cup game, playing an entire bench squad, the Rapids are pretty much in the middle. You saw some squad rotation. Clint Irwin started, but he's a very good keeper. I think most of us would think with the right opportunity, including the 2020 Colorado Rapids, he's probably a starting goalkeeper. Lalas Abubakar was a pleasant surprise in terms of the starting forward role. You saw Nicholas Mosqueda, who was on a good run of form. You saw Diego Rubio, who had one of the few good performances. You know, this was a... You know, if the Rapids' first choice starting 11 for Connor Casey right now is an A at a 95%, and then the full B team is a C at 75%, like, this team was somewhere between probably 81 and 87 for me. You know, I'd put it like an 83 off the top of my head. You know, that's a middle of the road team in terms of rotating out starters and rotating out bench players. And it just so happened that they played a really good USL team that played the first choice starting 11, and the game could have gone either way. And in a couple key moments, New Mexico was better and they won a coin flip, you know, in winning the PKs. So I don't think that the front office is ambivalent to the Open Cup. I don't think that the Rapids as a whole are any more ambivalent compared to the other average MLS team. They're just not as good as the average MLS team. And as you said very well, Mark, the Rapids, in being a bad MLS team, don't have as much depth. So when they have to play on the road or during schedule congestion, their bench will have trouble at times with the starting 11 for a very good USL team. So I think the issues that the Rapids are having in the Open Cup is more a reflection of how good, or rather how bad, the team has been, rather than how seriously or not seriously the team is taking. Now, given with the change in schedule, the fact that MLS has tended to leave that weekend open for most MLS teams, going into that first Open Cup match, the Rapids chose to play on that Saturday with it being an international weekend. They wanted to play. MLS teams have the option to say whether or not they want to play in particular international windows. The Rapids could have chosen to say no to that, like a lot of MLS teams did, and then they could have played the first choice starting 11 on 10 days rest, in the Open Cup. So that's a decision that maybe the Rapids could change. I think in general, I would like it if MLS teams took that first round of the Open Cup more seriously. And we saw a Zlatan Ibrahimovic type, or a Wayne Rooney in the Open Cup, or, you know, seeing a full choice starting 11 from the New York Red Bulls or some of the other lower level MLS teams. But that's something that I think we have to look on the league wide level. And if there's anybody I'm pointing to and saying, you're not taking this tournament seriously and that devalues it and that's bad for American soccer, there's at least five teams off the top of my head who I am pointing to before I point to the Rapids. All right, shall we get out of here, Mark?
Let's go.
Listeners, follow us on Twitter individually at soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard. Check us out as a podcast on Twitter at Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHDHL. If you've got something longer than 280 characters, you want to get in touch more privately, Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com, or we also have open DMs on Twitter. Patreon.com/Rapids96Podcast. If you think we bring monetary value to your lives and you want to, add it to us, find us wherever you get your podcast. Rate, review, share us on social media. That's the only way anybody finds out about stuff. Or Mark and I shamelessly send, free stuff to people in the know and then they share it and give us a plug on Twitter. Mark, why don't you re-up, what the deal that we have with the Denver Post is?
Denver Post. You can get a subscription to the Denver Post, which is Denver. I think it's www.denverpost.com/subscriptions/HTHL, or is it just /HTHL?
Just /HTHL, all lowercase.
And you'll get a break on the subscription for the first couple months, and then the price will go back up. But it's a really good deal to subscribe to the Denver Post. You get all the content you could possibly ever want. Local Colorado news, weather, sports. They did an amazing, if you weren't following it, when Pat Bowlen died this, past week, may his memory be for a blessing for all the great things he did for the Denver Broncos. The Post did a great 12-page spread on Saturday on Pat Bowlen. And, you know, you get all that kind of great coverage. Along with our regular Colorado Rapids reporting for me and Jake Shapiro. And if you want, you just want the sports stuff, you can get a cheaper subscription, which I think comes in at like either $7 or $6 a month. So highly recommended. Support your local media. And that's the Denver Post. And the other thing that I'll point out, Matt, that you pointed out a little bit is if you want to help support the show, subscribe to us on Patreon. And we'll send out to you for the right amount of money a mug. So if you give us about $5 a month, or if you just decide to give us a one-time gift of $40, we will send you a mug. It says Holding the High Line on one side, and one of our favorite catchphrases from when the season was not going very well, "Hello, darkness, my old friend." You too can be like some of the elites in the soccering world and drink your brown liquor out of an HDHL mug, folks.
All right, with that, listeners, we'll see you next week. We're talking about, I guess this would be 6 games unbeaten in a row for the Rapids against the Bacon Whitecaps. We'll see you then.